I don't think that means that just because we do Adulting 101, we're going to win. But I think you've got a chance when you're connecting with your athletes on a different level than just whether or not you're a good volleyball player or a good football player. If you're connecting with them as, I want you to be a better person, then you're connecting with them in a level that can help get them over the hump when things are really challenging, because it's not you versus them.
The volleyball players at Central Michigan University are not only winning on the court, they're picking up the skills necessary to be winners in life. And that's a Duff Said.
This is the Birdhouse, and we love the Duff Said podcast because it's the most informative of all sports in Michigan. Woo!
This is episode 19 of A Duff Said. I'm your host, Duff Tyler. Thank you so much for hitting the play button on this podcast. On this edition of A Duff Said, we'll be talking about the Central Michigan University volleyball team, Fire Up Chips. Now, the Chippewas are having one of their best seasons in recent years, and when head coach Mike Gullick took over the program 4 years ago, he wanted to make his players winners on the court, but he also wanted to give them the skills that they would need to succeed in life after volleyball. And that's when he created Adulting 101. Now, this is a course that he created for the players in his program to teach them about simple things in life. Things like going to the grocery store, or picking out the right clothes, or even being able to change a flat tire. Now, these are things I have never discussed in an interview with athletes or coaches. The subject just never came up. But I did get a chance to catch up with Mike Gullick recently to talk to him about Adulting 101, and that conversation starts now. So what's the concept behind Adulting 101?
Well, the concept is just kind of teaching them some skills that we're going to need after graduation. And I feel like the concept was something that I felt strongly about. I feel like it's one of those things that probably should be taught in all of our colleges and schools, but for whatever reason is maybe left out or is in snippets in a bunch of different classes. But I kept finding myself saying that I wish this class existed. And when I got myself in a position to be a head coach, it was one of the things that I wanted to make sure was a staple of a program that we ran. And so that's kind of where the idea came from. And it's kind of evolved ever since. So it's been fun.
There is a lot that college doesn't prepare you for. And I can vouch for that. And I've been out of college for almost 20 years now. When did you get that vibe that something like this would be beneficial to them?
Well, I think we kind of started Adulting 101 about 3 years ago. And so it's not even that new of a program for us. And I think it's kind of gained a little bit of publicity, but it is something that we started a couple of years ago. And just as a kind of a twofer for us, I felt like on two different fronts it helped us out. And we thought, okay, it's a good way to kind of teach some life skills for sure. And then we like the team chemistry idea of just kind of learning something different. And again, in our season, which can be a lot of volleyball 6 days a week, 6.5 days a week with recovery and preparation for future matches, we just thought it was a way to kind of decompress kind of throughout the week and put ourselves in a position where we can maybe learn something a little different, give our brains a little bit of a break, and yet learn something that's important. So, so it started about 3 years ago, and it's really kind of been one of those things, like I said before, that maybe started a little bit slowly, but has become something that we now use in our recruiting process and use some donor funds to expand on some of the opportunities that we have. And it's been getting incredible feedback from our student athletes and their families.
Now, is this just for your volleyball players, or can other student athletes get involved too?
Well, we just do it for our volleyball players. I do think it would be helpful for any team to do it. And in some ways, I've been approached by other people to kind of say, hey, would you expand and let my team do this? Or I have no problem sharing notes and kind of what we do. But I think one of the things that makes it really special for us and intimate in a way is to do it just with our team. And I find that we have really good questions that are asked because it's a small group and everybody's comfortable with each other. And there's no sense of self-consciousness if you're asking a question that seems silly. And it also allows us the opportunity to really participate and get our hands dirty, so to say, with anything that we do, instead of being in a larger group of you know, 50 or 100 people with the athletic department. So as of right now, it's nothing that it's not a secret, or it's nothing hidden. And I talk to a lot of other coaches about how they can run a similar program. But I think it's something that we've just kind of kept in house with our volleyball program as a way to build our team chemistry at the same time.
In the time that you have done this program, how many times have the kids come up to you and said, "I had no idea that that's what life was like"?
You know, I think it happens. I think the coolest moments I've had is a couple of players that have graduated a year ago or 2 years ago, and I'll get a text out of nowhere from a kid I haven't heard from in maybe a year or something. And they'll be like, "Oh, you know, I had an interview and I knew what business casual meant," or, you know, I just bought my first car and I remember what we learned about when we talked about the difference between buying a new car or a used car, or some tips that, you know, a local car dealership gave us about how as a young females in particular, that they could make sure that they're not taken advantage of by a car salesman. And so some of those things, I think it's when you hear those things back maybe a year later and they're still maybe recalling a tip or two that they learned. I think those are the kind of the really cool moments when it wasn't just the one that we had last week. It's something that maybe we had 2 years ago that they still can recall a little factoid or two to help them make a better decision or something like that. So those are the neat moments, I think.
When you started this a few years ago, did you ever imagine that it would get to that point?
No, I really thought it was something that I just was passionate about. And I'll give you a little bit of an idea. We started it in the fall of that year, and I felt like at the time I didn't get really tremendous feedback from the student athletes, and yet I thought it was important. And I thought, you know, people were just being like, "This is weird. Why are we doing this?" You know, those kind of things. And so it worked with that team and that schedule, and we were intertwining some sports psychology type stuff with it, and some nutrition stuff with it. And so it wasn't an every week thing that we did it, but it was every maybe 3 or 4 weeks. And we continued that in our spring season, which was our off season as well. And the next fall, so now a year later, it really just didn't work with the schedule. We just didn't have the time to kind of have everybody together during the fall. It's a busy time for us. And so I kind of put it on the back burner for that semester, just based on time, not because I thought it was not an important thing. And in the postseason kind of meetings with my players, I had 12, 13, 14 players come in and say, "Whatever happened to Adulting 101?" And players that had never even really experienced it, that were new, were like, "I heard all about this, and why didn't we do that?" And I had no idea. I think that was that point that I realized that it was a better connection with our team than maybe I was giving it credit for. I didn't know that they were even as passionate about it as they were. And yet that was rewarding to find out that they cared about it a lot. And they thought it was really helpful for not only their development as individuals, but our development as a team and our team chemistry, just kind of getting out of the gym a little bit. So we really kind of brought it back more full time. And now we've been doing it really every maybe 3 or 4 weeks since. So it's been fun.
Yeah, you touched on it a moment ago. Being in a season, it's a grind. You guys are constantly going to practice. You're on the road a lot and playing a lot of matches throughout the Midwest. And so as a coach, what's it like for you when the kids are more or less willing to put down the volleyballs and really just sit down and talk about life?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's important. And I think that, you know, we actually count it in our 20 hours a week that we're mandated by the NCAA. So, like, you know, we feel it's that kind of important. And I feel like when you invest in people, and when you invest in, this is beyond just sports or athletics, but when you invest in people, I think they buy into what you're talking to them about, and in all phases. And I feel like there's an old saying in volleyball that says they don't care what you know until they know that you care. And I feel like this is just one of the ways that we try to show them how much we care about them, not only their ability to kill a volleyball or dig a volleyball or score points for us, but really kind of who they are as humans and what they're going to be capable of doing long beyond their volleyball days are over. And I feel like when you're talking with recruits or you're talking with their families and you're talking about, you know, a transformational experience that we want to have here at Central Michigan, you know, it's about more than just winning volleyball games, and it's about winning kind of long-term as well. And I think the more that we've invested in our players as humans and as people, it's interesting that the wins have kind of come in line with that. And I feel a lot of that is because they trust us quite a bit. And I don't think that's by accident. I think there's correlation there. You know, that's something that we pride ourselves on as a staff, not just myself, but my entire staff. And I think that we have a really great connection and chemistry with our team, not just our teammates to teammates, but teammates to coaches. And I feel like that's so important when you're trying to do big things and you're trying to give them tough feedback or criticism or any of those things, that they know that we're all on the same team and we're all pulling in the same direction. So I think in a lot of ways it's benefited us on the court, even though it's spending less time at practice, but it's spending more time investing them as people.
Now, how has this benefited you in terms of recruiting? You said the feedback from parents has been very positive. What's it like when you talk to some of those parents when you're trying to bring their kids on board and you tell them, I'm not going to just teach them volleyball, I'm going to be teaching them about life?
Well, I think that's a big thing is that we try to do is, I feel like as a coaching staff, in the collegiate world or collegiate athletics, like you're going to spend way more time with them than they are with their kids while they're in college. Like I spend more time with my athletes than their parents do, because I see them 3 hours a day. I see them 20 hours a week. And even if mom and dad come and visit on the weekends, they're not seeing them 20 hours a week. So, I think our big push is that we have to be an extension of mom and dad. And this is just, not being a replacement, but being an extension of that. And that's kind of teaching them some of the things that mom and dad probably have started to teach them. It's not like when we bring up some of these topics, some of our players are very familiar with some of these things. Some of our players have had experience with some of these things before, and some of our players, it's the very first time they've ever dealt with it. And so we draw upon the experience of our student athletes to help teach each other at times when they have a familiarity with it. But I think in recruiting, when you can talk to a student athlete and their parents about, not only what is in it from a volleyball perspective, and you're going to start and play and we're going to try to win trophies, but we're going to also at the same time try to get you prepared so that you don't have to make phone calls back home after you've made mistakes about maybe fundamental investing or what are your benefits or, man, you signed a really bad loan. And those are kind of some of the mistakes you make only through trial and error sometimes, at least that's my experience. And so when mom and dad know that we're kind of building them up, I feel like they feel a lot more comfortable. I'm not going to say turning them over, but sharing that guidance of who they become as people with us as a staff. And I think it's really fun. We try to make it really educational and fun. We try to keep them maybe between 30 and 45 minutes. These aren't for the most part really long things. And we try to get them as interactive as possible with the people that we bring in to kind of share their knowledge with us. So I think everybody has really had positive feedback about it. And the amount of people that I've had reach out to me trying to emulate the program, I think is really awesome, because I think they're good skills for everybody to learn.
So for somebody who's hearing about this for the first time, what would a normal Adulting 101 course be like?
Well, I feel like it's maybe less of a course than you might think. It's not note paper and books, and it's not a PowerPoint presentation, but we really just take a skill. I think it probably starts at the end. What skill do we want to teach them today and why? And then what we typically do is we try to look for somebody in our community that can teach us from a standpoint of having expertise in that. And we have people volunteer all the time that want to teach us something. And it's only 30 or 45 minutes. And for example, we did one on how to sew a button and how to repair like a small rip to a pair of pants that you don't want ripped, even though the ripped is sometimes the style, or how do I change a button? And we had a local seamstress come out, and her name is Cindy, and she was wonderful. And she brought, we bought buttons and fabric and some string for everybody. And she just walked us through some basic stitches. She came around and helped us out, and people had questions and, oh, I never knew that. And that's something that I would have never thought to do. And we ended up having five or six people that went home and changed a button on their shirt or pants that they wish they would have changed 2 years ago. So I feel like when we're crafting these things out, they're really just ideas that come to any one of us as a staff. It's like, huh, how come I don't know that? And would this be something that people would want to know? I mean, everything from trying to pick out produce at the supermarket, like, does anybody know how to pick out a good pineapple, right? Like, we're all doing these crafty things at the supermarket trying to figure it out. But so we got in touch with the produce manager at a local supermarket and had him kind of walk us through what's ripe and what's going to be ripe in 2 days and what's never going to be ripe again. So those little things, I think, they just kind of come to us as, little ideas of, man, I wish I knew more about that, And when we have that idea, I think we just kind of bring it out and say, my guess is that they have that idea too. And we also accept some suggestions from our student athletes, and they bring up some stuff occasionally as well. So we're always, always open for new suggestions.
Did they also get that lesson of, once you get out into the real world, there's this whole concept of shopping on a budget and making sure that you can make ends meet when you're picking up all that stuff at the store?
Yeah, I think part of that is true. You know, it's kind of like, well, you know, the guy that we met with, and I'm sorry, I forget his name. It's because this was one we did originally. And but he was talking about, you know, like how, you know, fruit is seasonal and how, you know, buying blueberries or raspberries one time a year is a lot different than buying them another time a year, and how it's the season for sweet corn or not sweet corn. And but just kind of took us around the supermarket and was able to kind of have people in a very first one-on-one kind of experience, but pick up different pieces of fruit and say, hey, feel this one. You see how this avocado has a little bit of give to it. Like, that would be an avocado. If I was bringing this home and I wanted to have this tonight, like, this would be the avocado I would choose. However, if I'm buying avocados for 2 days from now, I would pick this avocado. And, you know, it's got a little bit more of a firmness to it. And, you know, things like a banana or certain things have a visual representation of whether they're ripe or not. But a lot of fruit and vegetables, sometimes you don't really know what you're doing. And then you get them home or you cut it open and you feel like, oh, man, that was a big letdown because I thought I had a better, you know, I thought I had a better, you know, pineapple or watermelon than I ultimately did. So, again, anytime we can get into the environment that we're trying to do or actually get them to change a tire or jumpstart a car or those kind of things, you know, we're trying to get hands-on. So we feel like there's a lot more learning that goes on, and it can be really fun and engaging when you're not just listening to a presentation. So those are some of the things that we take into account for sure.
Now, you coach young women that are typically between the ages of 18 to 22 years old. And when they signed on to play volleyball for you, I kind of get this sense that they probably never thought in a million years that they would be taking a course in how to change a tire on a car. What was that experience like?
Yeah, that one was really good. We had a local dealership kind of take us in, and they kind of walked us through, you know, not only how to change a tire, but where would you find your spare tire? How do you make sure that you have a spare tire and that it's filled up? Because a deflated spare tire does nobody any good in that moment. You know, and I think one of our messages was, you know, you can always ask for help, but we never want you to feel like you're stranded or that you're a damsel in distress, so to say. And so, you know, if you have an opportunity to call AAA or if you have an opportunity to call, you know, a tow truck, that's always an option. And we don't ever want them doing anything that's unsafe. But in a situation where they feel like they have to take action, they now know where to find their, you know, where to find their jack and their wrench and where to find their tire and, you know, how tight to get the lug nuts or how hard they actually have to work to get the lug nuts off or, you know, some of those things. And so, you know, it's just, it's not anything that we want them doing anything that's dangerous, but again, in a pinch, they now have a better idea of even where they're looking, so that they can not be in a position of helplessness. So that one went really well. And we actually had, we had them use their, not only the manual tools that are in a lot of the cars, but also had them use some of the power tools that were at the dealership as well. So that was a kind of a fun one. And they actually competed to see who could change a tire the fastest, kind of like a pit crew. So that one was really fun and engaging.
I'm curious, who won the contest?
Oh, well, we had a group of four that ended up doing it in just under 2 minutes they were able to do it with the power tools, which I don't know that was NASCAR worthy, but I thought it was pretty good.
And I think that's great. I mean, that's probably something that they never imagined they would be doing, becoming an NCAA athlete, that learning these particular life skills that you never know when you're going to need them, but when you do need them, they are very handy to have in your back pocket.
Yeah, that's just, you know, it's some of those things that, like, we're trying to teach them skills that they don't even know they're going to need, and questions, answering questions they don't even know they have yet. And, you know, a lot of them, I think, that our student athletes are bringing up have to do with financial, you know, whether it's things like, you know, one of them we did was on their credit score and what is their credit score and how is it impacted by some of the effect they're doing like right now. And I thought that one was really good because I think some of them learned some things that are valuable to know now as they're trying to build a credit score, which will impact their ability to get, whether it's a loan, whether it's to, you know, buy a car, a house, those kind of things, and kind of grow their credit score now before they are in a position where they find out that they have bad credit or no credit. And so I felt like that was a really good one. You know, budgeting you had mentioned earlier, but, you know, how do we manage a budget and what are the important things that we need to kind of make sure that we're accounting for, especially as we get out of college and we have bills that maybe don't exist right now because either we're in a position where a scholarship's paying for it or maybe mom and dad are helping out. But as we're on our own, Like, yeah, you're going to want to budget X amount of dollars for certainly not only your rent or your mortgage, but utilities and things like insurance and car insurance and health insurance if you don't have it through your employer. And just some of those things can be an eye-opening experience when people start to realize what really is going on. And one that we have on the docket kind of coming up here probably in February or March is going to be on taxes and how to file your own taxes. And, you know, just kind of what you would be planning for, that when you're making X amount of dollars in a job, you know, that's always pre-tax dollars typically. And what are your taxes going towards, and how do you know what you're paying and how to file that to get as much back as possible? So we find that a lot of our student athletes like the ones about finances maybe the most, because they see it as saving them some money in the future.
Oh, for sure. And it's important that you're starting them out this young, because in a couple years, they're going to start making money, but they also need to know the importance of saving your money.
Yeah, I think that's a big one too. I mean, we talked about some financial saving plans, and again, not trying to give them any stock advice necessarily, but just talking to them about the value of saving and the value of interest, and kind of the idea that the best time to start saving is 10 years ago. And if you can start tucking away a little bit at, you know, 21 or 22 years old when you get your very first job, if you can learn to live on less and save a little bit of money, just seeing how that growth can really kind of be exponential over the course of you know, a lifetime, a 40-year lifetime, is if you start saving 10 years earlier. They were talking about how the average person doesn't start saving until they're 33. And how is, if you could start saving at 22, even if you save $10 a month starting at 22 versus starting to save at 33, like the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars by age 60 that you'd have different, you know, and kind of using math models to show them really, it's really not saving more money, but it just starts working for you as if it's even invested at a pretty modest rate. And so the value of saving and the value of not necessarily maxing out your paycheck, which is buying stuff versus kind of being responsible with it, is something that I think is important to see at an early age. Because if we can get them starting to save at 22 or 23 versus 33 or 40, they'll be in a far better place. And if 25 years from now, those are all my donors, I keep saying. I was like, I need you to start saving now because you're my donors 20 years from now. So hopefully they'll give back to the program when they make a lot of money. So, but I think those are some things that just foundationally we want to make sure that they understand the benefits of saving as a whole, even though we're not trying to direct them to put money into the stock market or bonds or any other things that they could do, but just having a general understanding of it.
So where are these lessons that you're passing on to your players coming from? Do you believe that these are things that life has taught you, or is this just the basics to what everybody in society needs to know?
I think a little bit of both. I mean, I think there's things that I reflect on my own experience. I was, you know, I bought a house at 22 and didn't really know what the heck I was getting myself into. And so everything from what is a mortgage or what is interest rates and what is insurance and what insurance do I need and what insurance, you know, should I get the cheapest insurance or should I get the most expensive insurance? And I'm a person that I ask 10,000 questions because I want to know. I'm a curious person by nature, and I want to know where my money's going. If I'm investing it, I want to know what I'm paying for, if I'm buying something. And I tend to ask a lot of questions. And so these were just some of the things that I feel like, I don't teach all of these items on our list, but there's things that I think I've learned the hard way in some ways. You know, and some of these things I've avoided because I've had good advice from my folks who I think tried to teach me some of these things. And there's some things that I just put on the list because I really want to learn about them, because I still don't know what 0% APR financing means when I'm trying to buy a new car. And I'm like, I want to know what that means, because is that good? Do I need that? And so those are the kind of things when I just feel like I don't know something that I feel fundamentally I should know. I feel like that's kind of a big thing that kind of is a bell and whistle in my head that's like, maybe we should try to learn that all together. And there's a lot of times during Adulting 101, we're at 37 years old, I learned something I've never learned before. We just did one 2 weeks ago on dining etiquette. And we were, this one was a little bit more of a formal one that we did, but it was on, you know, dining etiquette in a formal situation when there's, you know, three forks or five knives or whatever and five glasses on the table. And how do you behave in that scenario? And for our young women on our team that are, like you said, 18 to 22, they haven't been in many situations where they're they're in a really high class environment that they might be judged by what their etiquette might be. And just trying to identify that eating with your friends is different than eating with your boss, or, you know, eating at your kitchen table might be different than eating at a Thanksgiving dining room table with your significant other's family. And just trying to understand what environment they're in, and being prepared to act accordingly in that environment.
In addition to the dining etiquette course, there was another one that you held that, from what I read, was a big hit with the team. And this one was called Learning How to Dress for the Occasion. Now, in this particular course, you assigned the women on your team an event, and you asked them, what kind of clothes do you think would be appropriate to wear to this event? Now, as I've said before, the women on your team, they're typically between the ages of 18 to 22 years old. And while I hope this doesn't come off as stereotypical, because that's not what I'm going for here, when we look at young women in that age bracket, we tend to think that they do have a pretty good eye for picking out clothes and fashion. So when they came to you and they said, this is what I think would be appropriate for this event, where did those discussions go from there?
Yeah, that was one of the best. We got the most positive feedback, I think, about that one. And so just to kind of paraphrase that event, we had 10 young women on our team at the time. It was in the off season. And we came up with 10 different situations that we put into an envelope individually. And so they had to draw an envelope at random. And that was their situation that they had to come dressed for. And things that were in the envelopes, I'll give you a couple examples. One of them was, you're meeting your significant other's family for the first time. One of them was going to a wedding. One of them was going to a funeral. One of them was going to a job interview at a coffee shop. One of them was going to a job interview at a law firm. One of them was a casual Friday at a doctor's office. And one of them was a luncheon that they got invited to where it was business casual or business formal. And we didn't give them a whole lot of information at that point. And we told them to use the resources, look online, kind of find something appropriate. And then their role was a week later when we had the actual Adulting 101 course on dress codes, that they had to come dressed head to toe, kind of appropriate for that event. And you had made mention that from the fashion standpoint, that was less of our focus. It wasn't about who looked necessarily the cutest or anything, but it was about who was the most appropriate. And to help us get some feedback about that, we brought in a panel of people that could give us some of that feedback. And one of the women, there was three women that came and sat on our panel, and one of them was from HR at Central Michigan University. One of them was our athletic director's wife, Laura Alford, who comes to a lot of big wig events and kind of donor events and those kind of things. And one of them was Paula. And Paula works in our front desk, and Paula is a little bit more experienced, we'll say that. I'm not going to say older, but she's probably in her late 60s. And so we wanted to have the experience of somebody from a different generation, because it is different. And we've become more of a casual society than we used to be. But to get the opinion of somebody that maybe is coming from a different place or a different perspective. And so each one of our young women would get up in front of the panel and they would read their scenario out loud, and they'd have to describe why they chose what they chose. And they would get feedback firsthand from the panel as to, are they appropriate for the event? And a lot of them nailed it. And some of them needed a little bit of tweaks to being like, oh, I think you're a little bit too casual for this event. We had a young lady who wore jeans to the country club that she was supposed to be golfing with her boss at. And she's like, oh, yeah, well, I just thought they're really nice jeans because they don't have. And so it was just some feedback for her, like, you can't wear jeans to a country club. You know, she's like, well, I have a polo on. And she's like, I don't have any golf shoes. And they even said, like, you're going to need golf shoes. And she says, well, I didn't want to buy golf shoes for the event. And she's like, okay, well, but you should have borrowed somebody's golf shoes. Like, you can't wear sandals on the golf course. So just, and she had never known that. She was just like, oh, that's fine. I'm not really much of a golfer. So just little things like that, I think, are tips that I think everybody was cued in on. And I thought everybody did a really tremendous job kind of preparing for whatever event they had. But there were a lot of teachable moments there, I think, or things to consider or questions that you would ask in regards to getting more information. And I thought that was the biggest thing, because you can go to a wedding where they wear, a sundress, and you could go to a wedding where it's really, really formal. And sometimes it's just about asking the right questions as to what the attire really is. Some people's Thanksgiving is suit and tie formal, and some people, they wear jeans and t-shirts. And I think if you're going to meet your significant other, you better know what kind of group you're walking into. And I think the big takeaway is you'd always rather be overdressed than underdressed. And so that was one of our events that I think got the most positive feedback or the most learning, because it was so interactive and really put them out there to have to stand in front of a group and say, am I appropriate? And everybody's scenario was so different that they couldn't just wear what somebody else wore. So that was a really cool one. We were pretty proud of that one.
You mentioned job interviews, and I want to hit on that topic now. When I was reading about Adulting 101, there was a particular aspect of the course that I found really interesting. And this is the one where you sit down with your players and you get them to talk comfortably and you get them to speak with confidence. And as a sports journalist, I'm thrilled about that because, as you might expect, I'm in it for the sound bites. I'm in it for the quotes. And over the years, I have talked to a number of great athletes from high school to college to the pros, and they may be great team leaders or they may even be great contributors to their team. But once those cameras go on or once the recording devices come out, they become a deer in headlights. They get lost. They don't know what to say. They're fumbling for their words, and it just comes off as a really awkward conversation. And when I read that you were working with them on how to get them to speak comfortably, I was thrilled about that because in my mind, I started to think, you know, when I'm talking to these kids and they're lost trying to find the right words to say, in my mind, I'm thinking, you know, this is something that's a part of your daily life. This is something you love. This is something you're very passionate about. And if you're having trouble having a conversation with me about it, how are you going to perform in a job interview down the road when you really have to sell yourself and it's all on the line? So I'm curious to see how that progress is going.
Yeah, I mean, I think the neat thing about athletics as well is that we get opportunities to speak a lot, you know, whether it's interviews kind of before or after a game or in preparation for a weekend. And sometimes there's cameras on, but there's always a microphone on. And so we do a little bit of media training with them, you know, trying to get them ready for that moment. And some of them are overwhelmed by it at first, and I think they end up doing a great job. So we kind of intertwine some of that public speaking kind of into some of our media elements of our program. But, you know, especially as our young women, I had a young lady on our team that did an interview that I was able to observe. There was a video, and she used the word something like 27 times in a 2-minute clip, which was a lot. And she's an incredibly smart young woman, like a 3.95 student. And she wants to go into the health field. And I pulled her into my office and I had her watch this interview. And I said to her, I thought she did a great job. Like, her content was great. And I said, but one of the things you want to kind of be a little bit more aware of is the amount of times you use the word and we rewatched the interview, the same interview that we had just listened to. It was like a minute and 40 seconds or whatever it was. And she was counting the amount, and she had no idea how many times she used the word And I said, my only concern, and I think you're a great person, but my only concern is that as you go into the professional world and you're somebody's doctor, if you say 25 times, it affects your credibility, you know, especially as somebody that wants to have, and she's incredibly young looking. And I was like, you want to work on that. And that's something that, again, you're only going to be in that moment if we put you in that moment. And it's not something I want you to be self-conscious of, but it's something that we want to help work through. And I have noticed that she is working on it. She's slowing down how she talks when she talks on camera. She does a lot of interviews for us because she's a leader for us. And I've noticed that her pace of talking has slowed down so that she doesn't feel so rushed to say something and throw in so many because she's trying to think of something to say and just fill the silence. And so I thought that was kind of a neat learning opportunity for her that she can drop on, you know, and a few are going to happen, but she was, it was over the top.
And I tried to watch that myself. So I think that's great that you're working with these young kids on their speaking abilities, because like you said, if you're someone's doctor or someone's accountant or someone like that, you want somebody who's well-spoken, and it sounds like you're making good progress in that field.
As best we can. And I'm not perfect at it either. I want to be very clear on that. I'm sure I've said 10 during this entire interview, but I think the word like is also another one that maybe can help ruin credibility, or not help, but ruin credibility amongst especially young women who use that word a lot. And it can give a certain impression about who they are. And you want to avoid that as much as possible. So those are teachable moments, and we only get better at it by doing it. So we put people on the radio. We put people on in front of a reporter as best we can.
At the time of this recording with Central Michigan volleyball coach Mike Gullick, the Chippewas had the best overall record in the Mid-American Conference at 20-6, and the Chippewas also lead the MAC West division. So how much of the success that you've been having this season do you attribute to Adulting 101?
I think more of it just has to do with knowing that we're investing in them as people. And when things get tough and you get tough feedback or criticism from a coach that you know cares about you deep down, you're more likely to receive that information and take it critically instead of offensively. It's important for us from a standpoint of a coaching staff that we're not transactional leaders where it's, you know, we want you to do this for us and that's our relationship, but we want to be transformational and, you know, really kind of come away from this process as two people, a coach included, that are impacted by the relationship in a positive way. And so that's just one of those things that we continue to work on. I feel like when you connect with your student athletes on a variety of levels, you're bound to get more out of them because they are not threatened by you, or you don't come across as being the big bad wolf if you're not getting what you need. And that doesn't mean we don't have ever conversations that aren't challenging or you know, confrontation is as much of an Adulting 101 skill as anything. And the way that we kind of run our program, I think are not necessarily courses we have, but are important elements that we think are important to being an adult. Things like having face-to-face conversations, which believe it or not, are becoming more and more rare. And we have a rule within our program that we never text bad news. If you have something that you want to talk about, then we come and talk about it in person. And those kind of things are important. It's tough to give somebody news that they don't want to hear. And it's tough to confront somebody or give somebody feedback that you know is going to be challenging to hear. And I feel like as a head coach, I'll always ask them at the end of every one-on-one meeting we do is, what's something for me that I can be better at for you? And I really want to open up the doors to give them, to have them give me some criticism or give me some opportunity to grow in my career as well. And I think it's as much modeling what getting criticism that's hard to hear feels like. And when they give me that hard criticism, or if they give me something to work on, my reaction is as much Adulting 101 as anything. If I'm going to be a baby about it or be really defensive or right off the bat discredit what they're feeling or what they think, well, then I'm sending a pretty strong message about how they should receive feedback from me. And those kind of things are challenging in the moment because sometimes your first reaction in your head is to be defensive or that's not accurate or, you know, something like that. But all of that is Adulting 101 and how to confront somebody. And my hat goes off to those athletes that have the courage and the guts to say something they know is challenging for me to hear. And so it's important that I hear that and respond to that appropriately in the same manner that I would hope they would respond to tough news or constructive criticism. So those are the kind of elements that we try to. I think that when you've got all of that moving in the right direction, you've got a chance. And I don't think that means that just because we do Adulting 101, we're going to win. But I think you've got a chance when you're connecting with your athletes on a different level than just whether or not you're a good volleyball player or a good football player. If you're connecting with them as, I want you to be a better person, then you're connecting with them in a level that can help get them over the hump when things are really challenging because it's not you versus them. So there's no magic fairy dust, but I do think it's something that helps us, and it's an element that helps us move through kind of adversity to kind of get us through the other side.
In addition to all the real-world stuff that you teach them in Adulting 101, you also take the time to go on field trips as well. And there was a road trip where you guys went to New York City earlier this year. You got a chance to take them to the 9/11 Museum. Now, for you and myself, that is going to be one of the most impactful moments of our lives. That's something where we're always going to remember everything about that day. But for the girls on your team, some of them may have been just a couple years older. They might have even been babies when that happened, so they probably don't remember it. So when you took them to the 9/11 Museum and you showed them exactly what took place on September 11, 2001, what was it like to see their reactions to everything that was around them that day?
I think that was a really powerful experience for all of us. And like you had said, you know, our student athletes that went with us, they had absolutely no first-person knowledge of the day of September 11th. None of them had remembered anything. Now, some of them had some vague memories of the years following, and you know, they were aware that 9/11 happened for sure. But much of their knowledge of the event was through hearing stories from either mom or dad, or certainly just hearing about it in the media and those kind of things in the years that followed. It was interesting to share our stories from a staff, where were we, like you had mentioned, but then kind of getting to ground zero and seeing it and seeing the magnitude of how big these buildings were in relation to the buildings that are still standing around them. Seeing the memorial, seeing how many people were affected, and hearing the stories or the calls or the different radio signals that were kind of out there. It was an incredibly impactful moment. And I wasn't sure how it would impact our student athletes from the standpoint of they didn't experience it like we experienced it, which you had mentioned that. But I feel like everybody walked away with a very different experience from each other. But some people, I think, were really overwhelmed. Some people had to take a step away. And some people, I think, the magnitude of it was way bigger than they imagined. I think some people, it was bigger to all of us than we, in some ways, thought it would be, because of just the magnitude of how big these buildings were. And that was just it was a wonderful experience to have that kind of opportunity while we were in such a unique place and a pivotal place in world history, really. And so something that we definitely wanted to take advantage of. And I wish we would have even taken a little bit more time there. We were only there for about 2.5 hours, and I think we could have easily spent 4 or 5 in there and not run out of things to do. And that trip was interesting because we had played in a tournament the couple of previous days prior and had extended our trip an extra day to kind of be able to do some of these, what we felt were once in a lifetime opportunities. And we went from going to the 9/11 museum to then going to a show on Broadway, which couldn't have been, more of a really kind of heavy event in the morning and then a really awesome event in the afternoon. And we went and took everybody to go see Wicked with some donor money that we had and set aside for some of these types of events. And so I thought that day as a whole was a really once in a lifetime opportunity for some of our athletes that would probably never have that opportunity again. And it was the first time most of the athletes on our team, including our staff, including myself, had ever seen a show on Broadway. So really a neat opportunity. And then we capped off our day with going to Times Square, which was very touristy and very good for our Instagram likes that night. But a really kind of fun and well-rounded extra day that we spent in New York that I think struck our athletes on a lot of levels, both in a very meaningful way with 9/11, a really fun way, and then kind of a silly touristy way and going to Times Square.
With all those things that you just mentioned that you guys got to experience together as a team, obviously everybody's going to digest that in their own way. But as a team, you guys got a chance to build some memories that you can all look back on many years from now, and you can look back on all the relationships and the memories you guys built together as a team on that trip. That can be almost as impactful as winning a conference championship.
Well, I think they're different. I think that one is just a really cool life experience, to be able to have an opportunity. I think our athletes are very appreciative of the opportunities they have and from our donors and from, the university and the athletic department to provide us an opportunity to go do some of those things. A couple of years ago, we went to Army West Point and were able to kind of, tour their facility and the base and kind of learn about what they do. And so we try to intertwine some, I'll call them fun things or life experiences with where we play sometimes. But I think that, winning the MAC championship and something that we're contending to do and doing our best here over the last couple of weeks to be in that position, I think that's the product of a lot of hard work, and not only just hard work on game day, but hard work in our practice gym and hard work over the summer and hard work in our weight room and conditioning and those kind of things. And I think it's hard to in some ways compare the two, but I think that one is an opportunity that was provided that was in some ways given to them, but the other one is going to be earned in a very different way, should it be a possibility for us. So it's important to us to have both of those experiences on the table. And I think they're very different, but we all think they're very important to kind of help round out a student athlete to be who they are following college. Because I just think 18 to 22 is an age where you are developing so much as a person, and whoever you are going to be is developed a lot in those ages, in a good way and maybe in a bad way. And we tell our athletes all the time, you're an average of the 5 people you spend the most time with. And so you better make sure that you're surrounding yourself with good people. And we're lucky that we have a lot of good student athletes that surround themselves with each other and are really good influences on them long-term on the court and off.
So what does the future hold for Adulting 101? What are some things you're hoping to add to the curriculum?
Well, that's a good question. I think, I don't want to say we're running out of ideas because there's a lot of good ideas, but I think one of the things we have on the docket is I want to do something on insurance. I have somebody kind of lined up that can come in and talk to us about, in particular, home, auto, renter's insurance, life insurance. What does that mean? Just kind of what is, not trying to sell anybody anything, but just kind of what does that mean? And what is a premium and what is a deductible and what am I paying for or not paying for? What am I giving up? And I think we'll probably focus on auto insurance quite a bit because sometimes you can feel like you want to get the cheapest you can find. And there's an upside and a downside to that. Like, what are we giving up by paying less? And, you know, what does that really mean? What is the fine print there? That's one that we want to do. We want to do one on loans in particular, on, you know, getting a loan for a house or getting a loan for a car. In some ways, a student loan if they go on to a medical school or law school, or they have to take on loans for maybe school after their undergraduate degree. And I think those are the two that we kind of have on there right now. I had an idea the other day. This is going with where do we get our ideas from? Maybe on gratuity and when is it appropriate to give gratuity, not only for a server at a restaurant, but like, do I tip my mailman? Do I tip my barber? Do I tip my, like, what is appropriate there? And then tipping if I were to leave the country and how that changes. And I feel like that was one of the things that kind of came up. I don't know that that's an hour-long conversation, but I feel like that's something that are interesting things, kind of especially as you get outside the realm of a server at a restaurant, you know. But what about those other things that you might think, do I tip them? Do I not tip them? What do I tip a bellhop? What do I tip somebody that helps me with my bags at the airport? Is $1 appropriate? Is $5 appropriate? Does it matter how long they're carrying my bag? Does it matter how many bags I have? But just some of those silly questions. And that one just kind of came up because I wasn't really sure about if I should tip or not. Like, I was like, do I tip my mailman? I didn't know. I still don't know, but that's what I want to find out. So,
if you can send me some of the notes on that course, I would appreciate it. Because that's one that baffles me too.
Well, it's just so weird because you can, but that's the thing. And here we are. And I'll speak for myself. I'm 37 and I still don't know that answer. And I know that 22-year-old people don't know that answer. And so, in some ways, these things are just as valuable for me as anything. And when we go with the neat thing about this is that we deal with I'll call it a clientele, but a student athlete that is in our program for 4 years. And so what we really want to do is put together like a 3-year curriculum in some ways that we can kind of start recycling, because I feel like if you heard something as a freshman, it will resonate with you a lot differently as a senior. And so I don't think these topics have to change because our student athletes are changing. And so I think in some ways we're just kind of putting together all of these topics. And at some point we'll kind of go back to the beginning and hit those again, maybe with a different expert coming in, maybe with a little bit different of a focus. But my guess is that the athletes that have already heard that one time 3 years ago are going to be in a position to receive that information a lot differently the second time.
Yeah, these topics are certainly evergreen. They never change.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. And I'm always, I'm always open for new ideas. And so if anybody that's listening to this podcast has an idea or has an opportunity to kind of, that I need to know about, I think that would be a really awesome thing. My information is on the website, but I am always, always all ears. I've got an opportunity. I have some alums that we've reached out to, and we really just want to engage the community. It's another way to engage the community and engage the academic side of our campus and really get people out from the business school to teach us things. I talked about a woman from HR coming over and somebody kind of teaching us things. We want to do a culinary experience. And so we've engaged our dining services to maybe get us into one of the food labs to teach us some fundamental cooking things to work on, or cooking in a dorm room type thing, or cooking in a house. And how do I do that? Again, on a budget, or how do I make sure that, I'm doing some very basic fundamental things that can kind of put me in a better spot to cook for myself long term. And those are little things that we want to do, and not afraid to spend a little bit of money to get a really great experience. But some of these things we just like to do in-house with local volunteers or people that are willing to kind of give us their expertise and time. Those are some of the things that are on the plan, on the docket. We also teach them, every once in a while, we'll teach them like a, I won't even call it a life skill. It's like an adult hobby, Like we've done knitting before, and we did like a painting course to just give them some constructive ways to kind of use time, because we know that the collegiate person is got a lot of options that aren't great choices to spend free time. And so sometimes it's just providing them an opportunity to experience a different hobby that they might not ever try. And if somebody teaches us how to knit for 45 minutes, and you know, it's just some of them will never knit again, and that's fine. But it's just kind of a cool hobby to be able to have to pass the time appropriately instead of some of the other options that they have out there.
And it's something new that they can experience that they never thought that they would be doing when they signed up to be an NCAA volleyball player for your program.
Yeah, and it's fun. You know, like when we did self-defense, it was really fun. You know, it was one of those things. Like we were preparing them for a life skill, but at the same time, it's just sometimes it's just about connecting with your teammates and having fun doing something else that's not volleyball. And for some of our athletes that are really, really good at volleyball, well, they're all really good at volleyball, but some of our starters, you know, it gives an opportunity for everybody to contribute equally. Everybody's on level playing field. You know, there's no, you know, I do this better than you do this. It's just kind of, it's us together, and it kind of just levels the playing field for some of those athletes that might not get the playing time that they want or because of their part of their career. And so when we're changing a tire and they get out there and they're the person that can help in front of their teammates be in the spotlight, you know, we kind of share that too. So I like that element from our team chemistry as well.
I have one last question for you, and you're already starting to see this now. Girls are getting back in touch with you after they've been through the Adulting 101 course, and now they're out in the real world as we speak. They're getting back to you, and they're telling you what an impact it's had. The more and more you do this, what kind of feedback are you hoping to hear down the road as you continue these courses with the players that have been through it?
Well, I think maybe first and foremost, I just hope they're enjoyable, because I think if you can learn something and have a little bit of fun doing it, I think you're bound to remember it. And we don't want these to be painful. There's no tests to these. There's no exams. But I feel like you might not remember everything we talk about, or you might not remember everything that we do, but if you walk away learning one or two little tidbits from each one of the lessons, then I think we're moving in the right direction. And like I said, I don't think anybody walks away being an expert in what we're talking about, but if it gives them a little bit more confidence going in to get a loan or buying a car, or allows them to ask better questions for dress codes or about their taxes, then great. And, you know, I think those are the kind of things that if it just saves them a little bit of a headache or a little bit of a mistake that they might have made in the future, even if we don't ever hear about it, I'm pretty confident that it's not doing them any harm. And I just like that. I feel like I have a young daughter myself. She's almost two. And I just keep thinking to myself, like, I think I would want somebody to be helping my kid through this, especially in a time where I'm not right there to answer some of their questions or, you know, I'm not the one that's kind of seeing them on a day-to-day basis. So that's, I guess, what we hope to get. I can't imagine that it's not like every kid that's ever been through one of these things calls me all the time, but every once in a while you'll get a glimpse of, oh man, that stuck, or that was something that actually they remembered from last time. And I've caught my athletes talking to my other athletes, like newer athletes, about one that we've done before. Oh, you should have seen when we did this one, we learned this, this, and this. And even if it's just something like that, that just shows that it means something to them. So that's what we hope to get out of it. Preparing them a little bit. I don't think it's life changing, but I think if it's, you know, kind of just gets a little thing that they can remember to help pick out a good pineapple or change a tire if somebody is on the side of the road and struggling, then great. We've done our part.
And it's like you said, you don't have all the answers, but the goal is the same as every coach in the NCAA. You don't want to just make your players better athletes. You want to make them better people too. And certainly you're succeeding at that. Mike Gullick, this was a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for making the time to do it.
Well, great. I appreciate that. I appreciate you having me on. It's something that I have appreciated that this has gotten some traction with our local student newspaper and people like yourself, because it's something we feel passionate about. We've been doing it for 3 years with nobody knowing about it, and we'll continue to do it because we think it's just great. But it's just kind of neat to see that it kind of took off in some ways and became a little bit more of a talking point. But I think it's just a cool thing that I hope if nothing else, if anybody's in a position of coaching or something like that, and they have questions for me or want to talk about it or have ideas for me, I hope people would reach out to me. I can I'm an open book. This is not a secret for us. I just think it's a really cool thing that we need to be teaching a lot more young people, because it is important. We want to do one on how to register to vote is an important one we want to do next fall, and leading into next fall, so that people are in a position, especially if they're out of state, you know. And I think those kind of elements, not being political at all, but just knowing what their options are and how do they vote and how do they, when they're out of state or they're away from their county, and some of those things I just think are such an important thing for our athletes to know what their options are.
He is Mike Gullick, the head volleyball coach at Central Michigan University. Now, as I said earlier, the Chippewas currently have the best overall record in the Mid-American Conference, and they currently sit atop of the MAC West Division standings. Now, at the release of this podcast, the Chippewas were wrapping up the regular season with a weekend road trip against Toledo and Ball State. Got only one thing to say to that. Fire up, Chips. And that'll do it for episode 19 of A Duff Said. We will be dropping episode 20 next week. Yep, we've made it that far. Remember, you can catch that episode as well as previous episodes of A Duff Said simply by going to dufftyler.podbean.com. Until next time, this is Duff Tyler reminding you that if Duff said it, it must be true, because that's what A Duff Said.